And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on a Friday morning. That means very shortly we're going to be joined by our Friday panel, three intelligent, articulate and astute people to share their views with us over the course of the next hour. Also, later on at 11, we'll have our entertainment slot this morning. Michael and Fionnuala will be joining us to discuss some of the entertainment options on screen, both small and large, and on stage as well. Also, a lot of other things coming up on the programme this morning. But as ever, your views, your perspectives and your opinions are very important to us. You can contact us on 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages and for texts. You can call us 074 91 25000. Caroline and Niamh taking your calls. Caroline producing this morning as well. And you can also make contact with us via social media at Highland Radio on X or Twitter and Highland Hub on Facebook. Let's introduce you to our Friday panel, all of whom join us on Zoom this morning. We are joined by Michael Harrison, who is a cyber threat consultant. Michael, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed. We're joined by Councillor Martin Harley, the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council. Martin, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
And also joined by Mary Coyle, who's manager of Inadnae of Podrick. Mary, good morning to you.
Martin,
good morning. Anyone who was listening to the programme yesterday may well have heard our discussion with Liam and Helen with regards to the Farmers' Alliance and the prospect of a Farmers' Party. And it raises the question, is there a need for, is there an appetite in this country for a new political party? I want to go to you first, Martin Harley, as someone who's been in politics for many, many years, has contested local and national elections. Do you believe there is a need for a new party, specifically a Farmers' Party, particularly given that in the past, traditionally, the Farmers' Party would have been regarded as Fine Gael, your own?
Yes, most of the fairness, the farming community would have been a big supporter of Fine Gael in the years, and we would hope that we would have worked hard for them down the years. There seems to be around the Midlands. There seems to be, I think it's Michael Fitzmaurice, I think it was the first man that put this out there, looking for support on that. I suppose there's a lot of independence. Was in the Dáil, was a lot of independence within Donegal County Council even. So maybe they're looking at forming, if they have a grouping of maybe up to 20 people of TDs, if they could be a power broker in the next Dáil. And that's possibly what they're looking at. Whether the appetite, suppose the electors will tell us after the next general election what the appetite is for another party. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But some things, every so number of years, you do see new parties emerging, and then it's a case of how strong they are, whether they survive or not. So I suppose we have to watch the space and see how it goes into the future. But there's always parties that come up, whether it was the PDs came up, and different parties come up down the year. So there's a possibility, then it'll just depend what road they go when they get the powers in. So,
Mary Coyle, as a manager of Inadnae of Podrick, you're dealing with people very much on the coal face in terms of providing support to those who are in need, the food bank and so on. From that point of view, do you get the feeling on the ground that people want to be represented in a way that they're not being represented at the moment?
I think so. I think I'm not so sure there's an appetite there for a new party. I think usually that comes out of maybe over a single issue, like the farmers, that people will get together and they want a stronger voice to be heard. I think over the years now we've been, it's always been Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and I think there's a party in there now, Sinn Féin, and I think maybe it's time to give somebody else a try and see if some of the issues that we have here on the ground can be resolved. As you say, we have food banks. Food banks is something that I haven't seen in the past. This is something new. There's more and more families depending on this all the time. So whatever we're doing wrong, it's definitely wrong at the moment. So it's definitely time for change. Another party, I'm not so sure that we need another party. Sometimes I think there's enough in government. I think, you know, if they would possibly work together a wee bit more for the benefit of the people, we might get on a little bit better.
One of the perspectives and perceptions has always been that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, when you strip away the civil war and the history, in terms of economics, in terms of policy, they're not all that far away from each other at all, and they're basically two sides of the same coin. They're both in the centre, perhaps Fine Gael slightly more to the right than Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil would like to see themselves slightly left of centre. Fine Gael, perhaps in terms of their economic policy, slightly right of centre. But effectively, they're both pretty much the same. Now, as you say, the prospect of maybe Sinn Féin getting into government might give a new political slant in government. Piers Doherty can certainly talk the talk and walk the walk as opposition spokesperson on finance. Very articulate, very capable in doing so. It would be interesting to see Piers Doherty as Minister for Finance.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, you know, Piers is, he works pretty much on the ground here. We can see he's doing very good work in on this side. And I'm hoping he's a very strong candidate, and I'm hoping to give him a shot and see how it goes. As you say, he talks the talk. Let's see how he gets on. I think there's definitely an appetite there for something new.
But there's also the reality that as soon as a minister walks into the office in the Department of Finance, the first thing he's going to get is briefings from civil servants who tell him exactly how things are in relation to the books, exactly how things are in relation to government responsibility. And suddenly I suspect any incoming Minister of Finance, whatever their political hue, may find themselves getting hit on the back of the head with a big, huge sledgehammer of political reality. And I'll get back to Martin Harley on that one as well. Michael Harrison, a very good morning to you. Coming to you as well. As someone who is observing what's happening on the ground and speaking to people on the ground, Michael, do you think there's enough in politics, or do you think maybe there is room for something else? There is room for another player, maybe just to shake up what we have at the moment?
Yeah, well, there's certainly something there. I think the farmers, like this thing about the Farmers Party came about from a survey that the Irish Farmers Journal carried out, and I think the survey was just short of 2,000 farmers. And, you know, 75%, 3 out of 4 farmers said they would vote for another political party. And like, there is a sense in farming, and, you know, talking to, like, I live in a rural area here, and talking to farmers around this area, particularly talking to dairy farming, like, that's just one sector of it. Like, their income this year is down 8%. Like, for any household to take a hit of 8% in a year is massive. And they feel that the government, that the politicians aren't doing enough. They're not listening to them. There was a huge market with the Chinese market where the infant baby formula was going out to China. That's all stopped because the Chinese economy has slowed down. And there's been nothing has been got to replace it. And there is a sense out there, there's certainly a sense out there that the political system in this country definitely needs a shake-up. When you look at the problems we have with the HSE, with TUSLA, with policing, that's just three sections. I was like, the politicians, the political system has to take some blame for what has happened, because obviously what they're doing, the system that's there isn't working. And there is, as one of your speakers there is certainly an opportunity there for a new way of approaching these problems.
One issue, though, is that if you have a farmers' party, getting national unity within that party could be difficult, because the priorities of a farmer in Sean could be very, 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 very different to the priorities of a farmer, say, in West Cork. And wherever you go in the country, there's going to be different problems, there's going to be different priorities. And it would be very difficult for a new party to come up with a policy that can keep everyone happy and keep everyone on board. There is also, when you raise the issue of the HSE, TUSLA, and so on and so forth, there's a awful lot more to government than just one single issue. So whereas a single issue candidate or a single issue party can make a lot of noise and perhaps influence policy, if a single issue party gets into government, they're going to suddenly find themselves in a situation where they have to deal with TUSLA, where they have to deal with the HSE, and that could be difficult because it's going to bring them right out of their own area of expertise.
Oh, definitely. There's no doubt about that. It is like everything about you're running the country. It is there, and that's why we have public servants in the position, in positions to advise the ministers. But again, it is for politicians to represent everybody. And even talking at the farm, like certain sectors of the farming are doing extremely well. As you said, farmers in Cork might be doing very, very well, but farmers in the west coast of Ireland, they are probably suffering. And it is making sure that the politicians are out there and they're representing everybody. And there is this sense amongst a lot of people out there that that's not happening at the moment.
Going back to you briefly, Councillor Martin Hardy, in terms of that sort of political reality that any new incoming party, if they find themselves in government, they're going to have to deal with all the issues. And as someone who's been in politics a long time locally and has contested elections nationally, as you know, there is a hell of a lot on every politician's plate, particularly at Dáil and Shannon level.
Oh, yes, there is a lot. And it's we've seen one issue, people getting elected in the past, and then come the next election, it's a different story. But I suppose I watched a few episodes of Yes Minister there a few weeks ago, and I was just thinking what you said there about the civil servants mm-hmm. on the country, and I thought myself when I watched that episode, so watching Nigel Hawthorne as Sir Humphrey, he put the ideas into the minister's head of what to say, and I think that really is a lot of what goes on when you get up there. Mm. You say, well, this wouldn't be right, and this is what you have to say. And this is really what we have there. They might be telling the press there's so much money, but there isn't actually that much money there.
I mean, it's the age-old thing.
That's what it comes down to at the end of the day, Donal, really. Yeah. It's a lot of the civil servants are running the country.
Yeah.
The TDs make these spokespeople for the views of the civil servants.
The phrase you hear whenever a new minister is appointed is the minister is reading himself into his or her brief. And whoever that minister, whoever he or she may be, may find that brief in places can make very, very scary and very, very ominous reading in terms of, well, minister, this is what you have to deal with. And the minister says, oh, I want to do X, Y and Z. And the civil service go, yeah, but it's going to cost you A, B and C. And trying to marry all those different perspectives together is going to be difficult. We're going to take a short break. Just to remind you, 086 60 25,000 is the number for text messages, and for WhatsApp messages, you can call us, as we say, 074 91 25,000. Back after these. Back to our panel in just a moment. Before we do, I want to very briefly remind you that the Highland Radio Mega Summer Cash Draw is taking place, and the first of the draws is on this programme this morning. So the lines close at around about 11 o'clock. So if you want to get a ticket that's going to be in the pot for the draw this morning, you have got about another hour and a half or thereabouts to make contact with Highland Radio and get that ticket. €2,500 is on offer today. We'll be doing that draw, as I say, a little later on the programme, I think around about 11:30 or thereabouts, if I'm correct. So the lines will be open, so maybe hit that phone now and get that ticket organised. You can win €2,500 every week for the next 4 weeks, and then on the last final Friday on this programme, the ticket drawn will win the holder €10,000. So there's €20,000 in total to be won over the next 5 weeks. And by the way, if you win today, your ticket goes back into the draw for next week and back into the draw for next week. You could theoretically win all 4 weeks for the 2.5 and then win the 10, and you could win the entire 20 yourself. How likely is that? I wouldn't like to be putting money on it, but it can be done. It is possible. A few comments before we go back to the panel. Caller says, I hope a Farmers' Party does come along. Not only will it represent their voices, it'll also skim away the support of the two Irish parties, now united as Fianna Gael, and open the door for a Sinn Féin or left alliance that will brush away years of corruption and nepotism and challenge the power of the permanent Conservative government we call the civil service. It's an interesting point, but as we said, it could very well be that you can talk the talk in opposition, but when you actually get into government and have to deal with the political realities of running the country, that could be a very, very different thing. It will be very interesting to see how things pan out if and when that happens. Caller says the inshore fisher community would also need a candidate. Present politicians, both independent and in parties, are self-interested. And in fairness to our two guests yesterday, Liam and Helen from the Farmers Alliance, they did stress that they would be looking at supporting the fishers as well. Caller says, I was a Sinn Féin voter all my life, but Sinn Féin went with every single thing the government said and did during COVID. We, the people, have woken up to all this stage act. These parties are the same when it comes to the crunch they stage act, and Sinn Féin is now part of that stage act. Another caller says, yes, we in Donegal do need a party to represent us as farmers. We need a farmers' party. Another Potter says, obviously Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are the same. A vote for one is a vote for the other. Why don't they just amalgamate and stop trying to bluff us? Another party, again, a new party, needs new faces, and once elected, they need to have a massive change of civil servants, who we all know run the country anyhow. No point in new politicians when it's the same non-cooperative civil servants that are running the country. Now, we'll go back to our panel, and as I say, on the panel this morning, we have Michael Harrison, who is a cyber threat consultant. We have Councillor Martin Harley, who is the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, and we have Mary Coyle, who is the manager of Inadh Naoimh Pádraig. Now, an issue that's been discussed quite a bit over the course of this week is the issue of voluntary contributions in schools. I did make the point yesterday that I was both a parents' rep and a board of management member as a parents' rep many, many years back when my daughter was in primary school. And we did have a voluntary contribution. Now, my recollection is that year, I think we asked parents for 50 euro per family. And the guarantee we gave was that that money would go towards extras. The money would go towards books for the library. It would go towards equipment for the gym. It would go towards equipment for the recreation room. It would go towards items that were over and above the children's education that were designed to enhance their experience in the school. The perception now is parents are being asked for a damn sight more than 50 euro, and that money is going into paying electricity bills and so on. I want to go to our panel on that. Mary Coyle, going to you first of all. Voluntary contributions, they are still with us, but it does seem, anecdotally certainly, that now the voluntary contribution isn't to buy books for the library. The voluntary contribution is to pay the electricity bill.
It is. I think schools are struggling in general, and they are very much dependent on very active parents' committees. I know a couple of the schools around us here, they fundraise quite a bit, the parents fundraise quite a bit, and you're right, it's to carry out jobs in the school, repairs that are need to be done, and electricity bills that are very high. You only get so much capitation per child. And simply, I don't think it's enough. It isn't enough. And you do see it's a lot of extra pressure for principals and boards of management to try and cover all the costs in schools now. So I see myself in a big building like this in Inadh Naoimh Pádraig, how it has become so much more difficult to run a big building like this with the rise in electricity and oil and everything that keeps these buildings going.
Martin Harley, as a councillor, you'll have had an awful lot more, I suspect, board of management experience and experience in education generally than I ever had or ever will. What's your experience and view on this whole issue of the voluntary contribution?
Yeah, well, just similar to yourself, I've been on board of management national schools and I'm on the board of management of Case School at the minute through the ETP. So, and suppose as you say, I've seen parents' associations they do draws, they run musicals, they collect money to bring in. I know the minister did say yesterday that nobody has to make the voluntary contribution if they don't feel up to it, they don't have to do it. And I know myself that from down the years, but in fairness, you would always have an 80%, maybe higher than 80% of a take up on the contribution to the schools. And it was always the ones that probably maybe a lot of times it was the ones that could more afford it, the ones that didn't pay it. But that's I think that's society in general, really. No matter what you run.
And in your experience, are we in a situation now where the voluntary contribution is actually going toward the paying of the bills, the day-to-day expenditure of running the school, rather than going towards the extras and going towards enhancing the education? Effectively, the voluntary contribution is, not to put too fine a point on it, replacing money that should be coming from government to run the establishment.
Well, see, what I was finding is a lot of the time the money was towards photocopying services for the students, for the teachers, different things like that. I never would have seen it come across as where it'd be going towards the ESP bills or the oil bills. Unfortunately, oil bills have gone through the roof and ESP over the last 2 years. So it is putting a massive strain. And there was something that was discussed at ETP level about the extra pressure on schools to keep the schools running. And that shouldn't be the case. The case, as you said, it's the enhancement of the student's experience is what the contribution be towards. Okay, that's fair enough. The photocopying, things like that there. Some of the money that comes in, goes in, if students are doing like metalwork, woodwork, home economics, that some of the parents' contribution to those students would be towards those subjects where there's other extras that needed for their class for to do their to their different practical projects, things like that there. But that's up to each individual. And I know myself, if there never was a student that was left behind within the school system, that if they needed money towards a project, the school would always have got it for them. That never would have been said that you can't do it because you haven't made the contribution. So that would never know. I would say there's no principal or board have ever refused that to any child. But it is a difficult situation. But I do think that schools, I'm glad to see that the national schools now will have the free books going forward. That's a great step. We hope that hopefully that will, to a secondary level, that will move to a secondary level as well, which will be a good benefit for the vocational school level as well. So hopefully that will happen as well over the next couple of years. So
Michael Harrison, what's your take on this particular one? I mean, you know, we've all faced a voluntary contribution. We've all, you know, we've all paid it at some point. Good thing, bad thing, or is it now being used to do what should be really done by government?
Well, no more than yourself, Donald, I was on the parents' committee here in the local national school when my two boys were younger, and it was absolutely essential back then, you know, that the parents' committee raised money so that the school could properly function. And I was just looking last night at the budget submission by the INTO for last year, and like education and funding at primary level in Ireland is 11% below the EU average. So that's, you know, that's how far down the scale we are. Like we're not even at EU level. Back in when the economic crash happened in 2010, the capitation grant, it was €200 then. It was slashed then to €183, and it has remained that. It has remained at that. So I don't know how all of us know that, like, you know, the cost of living increases, and there's no difference for schools, but there's heating and the ESP. Must be astronomical, but yet they are expected to budget from the same amount of money, and it is very, very difficult, and it's quite annoying, you know, listening to politicians like Leo Varadkar came out in the Independent on the 30th of June, you know, quoting the section of the Education Act, the section 64 of the Education Act, and it's saying that it explicitly prohibits the charging of admission of enrollment fees to schools, but yet at the same time they expect parents' committees, and they expect parents, you know, to pay these voluntary contributions. Yeah, and the backdrop to that is that education hasn't, the capitation grant has been reduced since 2010, and as a nation we're 11% below the EU average. It's quite annoying, but parents' committees, they have nothing else to do. They want to make sure their kids are going to be educated.
And the reality is, if you compare inflation, if you compare the way costs have risen between 2010 and now, what €183 would buy you in 2010, it probably wouldn't buy a third of it now. And even that's probably being very optimistic.
Oh, it's absolutely, like, it's an outdated figure. It's an outdated figure. And, you know, that is quite common in the public service, quite common when it's in the Garda Síochána, that rates were reduced, you know, at the economic crash, have never, ever been reformed, have never, ever been readjusted, you know, to reflect the, you know, the cost of living increase. And this year has been exception on, for, you know, for all of us, and particularly, you know, for schools and if they're just given the same amount of money to operate on, it's the parents' committees, the voluntary contributions remain absolutely essential.
Michael Harrison, thank you very much indeed. We're going to take a short break. Back in a moment when we'll be discussing one of the big news stories of this week. That's the data breach that's been at the centre of the PSNI. We'll be speaking about that after this break.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal standing in for Greg on the programme this morning. We have our Friday panel in the Zoom room. We have Michael Harrison, who's a cyber threat consultant. We have Councillor Martin Harley, who's the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council. And we have Mary Coyle, who's manager of Inith Naoimh Pádraic in the Clonhilly area. Now, A few comments before we go. Does anyone know what happened to the RTE saga? Is it possible the government pulled the shutters on it? Maybe the non-payment of licence fees will bring it to the surface again, or maybe they'll hand it to the Inland Revenue to collect. Another caller says, tell Martin Harley to watch his own space, as people in the Twin Towns didn't forget he voted in favour of the property tax going up. Another caller says, can you ask your guests what is their opinion on the doctor saying they can't cope with all their patients and still we keep taking other people into this country from elsewhere? Can they give us an answer to what's really going on in this country at the moment? That's a question there from a caller that we may get to. Now, the issue we're going to talk about right now is that PSNI data breach, where the details of all employees of the PSNI, both serving officers and civilian and support and auxiliary staff, were in a document which appeared online, and it seems stayed online for a period of up to 3 to 3.5 hours. Michael Harrison, as a cyber threat consultant and also someone who is a former member of An Garda Síochána, this is an issue I'm sure you've been looking at with sort of almost two hats on, from a point of view of a very unique experience. What's your take on this, Michael?
It's every organization's worst nightmare, you know, that a data breach could happen. And most data breaches happen because of an attack, you know, whether it be like the one in the HSC where there's a ransomware attack and data is leaked, you know, onto the dark web. But this is one which happened. And from the reading the Belfast Telegraph this morning, the chief constable said he didn't blame one person in particular. He says it was a systemic failure when he was addressing the policing board in Northern Ireland yesterday. And it is very, very worrying. This is the, you know, the amount of data that was leaked. But there is a problem with policing. And the problem with police and what, you know, internationally, what the governments are trying to do, you know, they are trying to increase the number of Garda staff, the increased number of police staff, civilian staff, whether it be in the UK or whether it be here in Ireland, you know, to allow members to remain on the front line. But one thing that I think myself that happened here is proper training. And, you know, people are being parachuted into positions. They're not given proper training, like working with an Excel spreadsheet. I don't know if you know it. It is quite complicated. It is, you know, it really is quite complicated. And obviously, you know, the person that leaked this, there couldn't have been proper training given to them. But it is this is the biggest data leak in UK history. Yeah. And for one of the most secretive police forces in the UK to do it. It really is an embarrassment, but it is the people on the ground from reading articles there, people who have bought new houses, all of a sudden their stations are there. It's all about what an organisation can get. Like they're saying, addresses haven't been leaked. But again, there is a lot of information that's been put out there.
It calls into question the system because, I mean, and my worry here, and this has been expressed elsewhere as well, my worry is that some junior person in admin effectively takes a fall for this because they have made a genuine mistake. Now, from the off, the PSNI were saying this is human error, and very well it may be. And God knows, if I had to write a list of every document and every online transaction I've cocked up over the years, it would be a very, very long list, believe me. And when it comes to making mistakes online, trust me, I'm there at the very, very top. But, I mean, surely a system must have some check in place to make sure that the work of someone in admin, the work of someone in a clerical position, is at the very least being signed off on by a manager or being signed off on by someone who's higher up on the chain.
That's exactly it. If the policies and procedures governing the freedom of information, and the freedom of information section in any public organisation is a very, very important section, because the information that that a politician, a TD or a local councillor might submit an FOI looking for detailed information, that information that's given to the politician, it must be 100% accurate. And what happened here is obviously there's been a complete systems failure, but what, you know, the system wasn't followed, the policies and procedures couldn't have been followed, otherwise the data breach wouldn't, or the data leak wouldn't have happened. And questions must be asked of the senior management within the PSNI, how they allowed this to happen. You know, that is the question. Why did they allow this to happen? Why was a junior member of staff allowed to deal with a very, very important issue like a Freedom of Information Act request? Because that is the information that is asked. It has to be 100% accurate. And yet we see what happened.
Mary Coyle, from your own point of view, you're looking at this to an extent from outside. I mean, it's a fascinating story to watch unfold, but it's also a story that makes you take a deep breath and goes, how the hell could that happen?
And, you know, these things do happen, and they will always happen. Mm. You know, there will always be human error, and there will be, you know, there are people that are in management, and they're meant to tick all these boxes to make sure that this doesn't happen. But as we've seen, you mentioned there earlier about the HSE, the hack that happened with the HSE, and how long it took to get over that, and how many patients suffered at the hands of that hack. And I'd be more concerned now about the safety of people, you know, that the names are out there, and you can't take back what's happened. It's happened, it's out there, it's done, you know, and obviously, there has to be a system in place to make sure that this doesn't happen again. But now there's a bigger thing, because you have to think of the safety of all of those people. I was reading an article this morning before the show, and it was all about, you know, that some dissident Republicans were saying that they had the names of, that they had all these names. And it's just a worrying time. It's we have to think now about the safety of all these people. But, you know, these things happen, and people will always find a way. A hacker will always find a way to get, to hack into
of course,
system.
The difference is this wasn't a hack. This was actually put online by an employee of the PSNI. Yeah. And the difference, as you've said, if you or I make a mistake at work, we're embarrassed, and we may have to deal with a little bit of fallout from that mistake, and we may get hauled over the coals by our superiors, and, you know, we'll feel really bad about it for a while. But, you know, it won't go much further than that. This instance, this is a mistake huge. That could put the lives of people in danger and compromise the safety of many.
Yeah, and I feel so sorry for the people on the ground that was responsible for this breach. But as you say, this is not any one person. This is a collective mistake, and it's something that they've just have to work at now and make sure that the safety of the people in question are okay. You can't take back what has happened. But as the previous speaker said, this is massive. It shouldn't happen.
Martin Harley, you are a business person. You are an employer. And you know, as a business person and an employer in your own area, that you have supervisory duties. You have to spend a lot of time, you know, making sure that everything that's happening on your premises and everything that's being done by your employees is above board and is in accordance with various standards, hygiene, business, etc. So, I mean, you know, from your own point of view, as a manager, the responsibility that lies on you to ensure that your business functions and that everything is above board. I mean, how much more is it incumbent on an organisation like the PSNI to do so?
Yes, what Michael touched on there, Donald, was the fact of training and the fact that there's such a scarcity of workforce out there, and people are being taken into positions, maybe put into the positions, and the training will follow in certain circumstances. Unfortunately, what he may touch as well there, the fact that the safety of the people here now, that sometimes it can be a human error, and sometimes it may not be human error, it may be on purpose as well. So that's an issue as well that I'm sure that the PSNI are looking at the moment. I know myself, and I remember one particular night where a local guard was in the process of arresting somebody, and I know this particular guard a long time, and the man who was arresting wouldn't have had maybe a great reputation, but he was able to show him a picture of his own house where he lived, and I didn't even know where the guard lived, and I knew him for about 10 years. But that's the worry out there, that there's an element out there that are looking for the information, and if they know somebody that can get them that information, they will go and get it for them. And unfortunately, that's a problem as well. The cyber attacks. Of course, we've seen what happened to HSE, what happened there, and it put the whole system down for months upon months. And it left people in a very difficult situation, but their people's records didn't know what way they were as well. So there is a lot of, unfortunately, as we've gone down the road of working with machines, computers, and everything is on a touch of a key, and all your information could be out there within a few seconds. And that's the amount of, and as Mary said, no matter what you put in place, there will always be somebody out there to try and be ahead of you, and they're always trying to be ahead of the posse, and they're always looking. If they want the information, they will get it, whatever way they need to get it. That's a sad reality.
And Michael Harrison, going back to you as a cyber threat consultant, the other element of this, of course, is once the information has gone out there, once it's been published online, whether it's on a web page for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, you've now lost control of that. And even if you take that post down, you don't know how many people have downloaded files, taken screenshots, copied information, how much is it being circulated. There have been some suggestions that some of the information is now being circulated amongst people via WhatsApp. So as of now, the PSNI probably don't really have any handle on where the information is, how much it's circulating, and how many people now know it.
No, it's they've lost control. Like the control has been lost to the data. It's the same. It's the same. Like whether you or I, if we post a photograph on Facebook or Instagram or wherever or Twitter, once we put it out there, once we post that out there, we've lost complete control of it. And it is. It's all like it's getting all these small pieces of information, and criminals will gather all these small pieces of information and put them together. It's like the. Another example would be the extortion emails that we've all been getting over the last few months. Like I was getting them for weeks and weeks. And all you want to do is reply to this guy, you know, and just say to him, listen, go away. I know you don't have any videos of me. I know that's absolutely nonsense. But you have to think about it. This, what they have is just probably an email address. They probably have your email address, might have something else. This has come from another data breach. But all of a sudden, when you reply to them, now they have your email address, but now they have your first name and your second name. So now they have an awful lot more piece of information. And this is what's going to happen with this information with the PSNI. Criminals will use it. They'll have a certain amount of information, and they'll get other people to gather up more information. All of a sudden, they will know everything about the police staff in Northern Ireland. It's a very, very worrying situation. And, you know, once that information goes out there, the organisation that owned it, they've lost complete control of it. How this can be rectified, I have no idea. It's going to take an awful lot of money.
We're going to go very briefly to a break. Before we do, I want to really, really quickly mention just our Heritage Week competition, because it's running today as well. Two vouchers on offer, vouchers that will allow you access to many of Ireland's finest heritage sites. They're worth €90 face value, but that you can get an awful lot more worth out of them if you use them expeditiously. I'm going to give you three clues pertaining to a place in Donegal. When it comes to heritage, this is right up there at the top. And don't forget, Heritage Week, by the way, gets underway tomorrow. It lasts until Saturday, August 20th. You can go on to heritageweek.ie, create your own heritage trail by clicking on the county events list, and you can see the skills and practices and traditions that have passed down through generations. Three clues pertaining to a place in Donegal. I am a castle inside a park. You can walk to me or take a bus. I am beside a very large lake. I am a castle inside a park. You can walk to me or take a bus. And I am beside a very large lake, a place that has lots of wonderful walks. And best of all is you can do an 8K walk, and halfway there you have a cafe for a nice cup of coffee and a bun. What place in Donegal are we talking about? Going to take a short break, back after these. 086 60 25,000 for your text or WhatsApp messages. 074 91 25,000 for your calls. 00353 74 91 25,000 if you're outside of the dialing area. Some of our comments. Caller says, it's a pity the panel can't show the same compassion to all the victims of loyalist murder gangs in the six counties controlled and armed by the RUC PSNI Special Branch. I would not for one moment think the panel won't show the same compassion to the victims of any murder. I think your statement, caller, I can see where you're coming from, but I can't see the logic in it. Having compassion for one person doesn't rule out compassion for somebody else. It isn't an either-or game. This isn't zero-sum. This is real life. Why has the diesel gone up 14% in the past 2 weeks? Are the people running the country asleep at the wheel? The people of this country are getting absolutely annihilated. Now, part of the reason we've seen fuel prices go up is that there were some subsidies which had been introduced by government, and if I recall correctly, over the course of the past couple of weeks, on two occasions, there had been subsidies that were subsidising the price of fuel, and those subsidies ran out. and that's why we saw some sharp increases at the pumps. It isn't so much that the price went up, it's that the government subsidy that was keeping the price artificially low was actually withdrawn. Caller asks, any chance the government could give people their VAT back when they pay for fixing their homes without accessing the redress scheme? That's a question there from a caller as well. Right, let's get back to our panel, because one of the big stories over the past few weeks has been the high level of cocaine recovered in Ireland. They reckon in the region of €40 million worth of cocaine found across the country over July and the end of June. And of that, some in the region of 6.4 million of that cocaine was actually found in Donegal. Does this point to a wider problem? Mary Coyle, go to yourself. There was a time when people would have said, oh, cocaine, it's a Dublin problem, it's a Cork problem, it's an inner city problem, so you don't have any of that old stuff here. It would seem it's very different in Donegal now.
It is, and we've been very much in the public eye with what has been found on the coastline of Donegal. But you know, maybe in a place like Gweedore here, we get on with our everyday lives and you don't really see that much. But we would work an awful lot with young people, and we just had a fabulous festival there. And in talking with young people, it seems like it's readily available. It's everywhere. It doesn't matter, you know, whether it's here in Gweedore or wherever. Our age group, we don't see, we don't hear about it, we get on with our lives. But I think it's definitely a lot more. We have a massive problem with it. Our poor young people, we used to be always worried about alcohol and the amount of alcohol they would consume. You would wish now that that was all they were doing. You know, it's a massive problem. I'm sure the guards and the HSE would see a lot more than people like us working on the ground. But I think it's massive out there now. It's such a shame for our young people.
Yeah. Martin Harley is someone who works in the hospitality sector and someone who runs a pub and has done so for years. I mean, I suppose this is one of the things that you have to be constantly on the lookout for now.
Yeah, it's someone that's been on, let's say, 30 years, probably. And that's how long it's not just the last couple of years of this. And I remember talking to a guard with 29 years ago, and he said to me, if your kids are coming home with the smell of drink of them, he says, you'll be happy if that's all it is. He says, and that was 28 years ago. So it's not someone that has just arrived in Donegal over the last couple of years. It's been here a long time. It's in every town and village. People can say what they like. Oh, it's not in my village. It's not here. It's everywhere, unfortunately. And it's a massive problem. It's a massive problem for our young people growing up. We didn't have them issues. Donald, when we were growing up, we didn't have to worry about those kind of things. But unfortunately, when our kids go out the door now, that is a big, and there's big peer pressure on young people as well to try this, try that. Mm. And that's a big problem. And it's tough for young people growing up now in this society, because there is so much pressure on them. And of course, then the people who are dealing in it are saying, you can make this much money, you can make this. And that is a big pressure as well. This handy money culture that unfortunately, that is out there as well, that people think that you can make millions from doing very little. And that's what's happening. And I'm sure Michael's seen it a long time before he retired as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem.
And I'm going to go to you now, Michael Harrison, if I may, because obviously as someone whose history was in Ungartha Síochána, you'll have been on the cold face of this for a long time. One of the figures, Michael, that we've heard over the years is for every drug seizure that's made, there is a rule of thumb that says nine times that amount is still circulating in the community. Now, if there was €40 million worth of cocaine seized in Ireland, does that then suggest there's €450 million worth of it actually circulating across the country undetected?
The exact figure, Donald, I wouldn't have a clue, yeah, to be honest, but it certainly is high. There's no doubt. The other two speakers have said that the amount of cocaine in our community at the moment is absolutely massive. And I remember reading a report from the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, and worldwide cocaine usage I think we're in third place. There's Australia, Spain and Netherlands are the only other three countries that's ahead of us. So that's, you know, that's how far up the taking of cocaine, the, you know, in the league that we are taking. But these people that are, you know, that are buying the, you know, this cocaine, that are taking this cocaine, what they are doing, they have to remember that, and they have to put their minds at ease, you know, to themselves, that what they're doing is they're funding criminal activity. And people are dying, and people will die, and people will be murdered as a result of them buying this cocaine. We have seen in our own capital city over years the drugs, the drugs wars, you know, between the different criminal families in Dublin that went on for years and carried out, you know, spread even to far and wide over to Spain as well. You know, if, you know, where it's fighting, and that is what the people out there, and there's an awful lot of people right across society are buying this. Are buying cocaine. That's the question they have to ask themselves. Am I happy to fund criminal activity? Am I happy that people will die, will be murdered as a result of me buying this cocaine?
It is an interesting perspective, because I once read a piece, someone was commenting, we would have been commenting on someone who would have been fairly prominent in the music business, and they would have had a reputation as a heavy drugs user. And this person, you know, the comment was made that you wouldn't dream of eating an orange that came from South Africa, you wouldn't dream of eating something that came from Israel, but you've got no problem supporting the cartels in Colombia and supporting the criminal gangs in Dublin and elsewhere in our country.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, that is what, and you know, that is what cocaine users in our community, that's what they're doing. They are funding criminal activity. And as you said, you know, an awful lot of, you know, they might have their own personal ideas. Oh, I'm not going to buy anything from Israel because Israel does this in the Palestine. But yet they have absolutely no problem whatsoever in funding criminal activity in their own country. It just beggars belief. I don't understand it. But Ireland, we have a huge problem. And I would honestly say that an awful lot of that cocaine that was found in this country, I'd say Ireland has been used as a gateway probably into the United Kingdom as well, you know, for it to distribution, because our coastal security is absolutely non-existent. I'd say it is just an open door for them, and you know that is why Ireland here has been used as probably a gateway to probably the United Kingdom as well. And we have an open border with Northern Ireland, and it's very, very easy. The distribution of it, I'd say, you know, it is quite easy for them, and it is something our coastal security probably needs to be increased. And it needs to be increased to prevent this stuff coming in. But people need to ask themselves that question. Am I happy for people to, you know, to die as a result of me buying this cocaine?
Michael, thank you very much indeed. Well, the time on Highland Radio, it's now under 4 minutes to 10 o'clock. Before we wrap up, I just want to give our panel a chance to plug anything they may be involved in. If there's any events that are coming up that you might like to give a mention to. Councillor Martin Harley, I'll go to yourself first. Is there anything on the horizon that perhaps you'd like to give a bit of a mention to?
Well, I suppose back to my personal level, with 30 years in business this year, but we're having a colour run that we started in memory of our daughter Kim in 2017. She passed away in 2014. Unfortunately, we lost out 4 years and it didn't take place because of COVID and all, but was due to be up and running again this Sunday in Balbuffet at 2 o'clock. So we're hoping to have a family fun day for kids that love a bit of fun and a bit of music and all. So hopefully that's we're looking forward to that, and hopefully it'll be a good day for families. It's a family day, and that's what Kim was all about. So it's just in her memory for local charities.
Excellent. So that's Kim's Colour Fun Run. It's taking place, as you said, 2 o'clock in Ballybuffet. There'll be it starts at the shopping centre car park and makes its way up past Lidl, then the Trusk Road, finishing up on Navaney Street. And hopefully it'll be a really good day, and there'll be a nice buzz about the place. Councillor Martin Harley, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us today. Mary Coyle, from your own point of view, you're working hard there in Gwyddor in Nath Podrick. Any things you'd like to give a bit of a plug to? I know there's been some great festivals on, as you said, that Sult and others in Gwyddor and the wider area recently. The vibe is good in West Donegal.
Absolutely. We had an absolute excellent festival this year. Salt was bigger than and better. Also, Donegal Cancer Flights and Services is run out of the centre here. And we got great news yesterday that we received funding for a bus. So we have two local groups that are fundraising for us this weekend. There is a swim from Gola to Marigallen. by a group of swimmers on tomorrow at noon. And then we have the Columba Doherty Memorial race and fun day on Sunday, and all the proceeds are going to the Cancer Fund. So I'd like to wish them good luck, and please, if you're about, please attend.
And so say all of us. Finally, and thank you indeed, Mary Coyle, for taking part in our Friday panel today. Finally, Michael Harrison, anything you'd like to give a quick mention to before we go?
Oh, just anybody out there that knows how to improve the weather, certainly ask them to do that.
Oh, no, hang on a tick. We can't work miracles, Michael, now, in fairness.
I just want to wish Martin as well the very best for his fun day on Sunday. It is, you never forget a loss, a loved one that has died as a result of a road traffic condition. But it's lovely to remember Kim in such a fun way, to organise an event like that. And, for her memory, as Martin says, it is about life and enjoying life. And, that's what it is. So just hope everybody has a good weekend, and just with the help of God, we won't get that much rain. But thanks very much anyway. Don't have me.
And we couldn't leave it with a better sentiment. Michael, Mary, Martin, thank you very much indeed for taking part with us this morning. Thank you.